Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and a very good afternoon to you. Wonderful to be with you on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon here, just gone 10 past 2, and it is Judaism 101.9 with Rabbi Michael Katz. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. And we hope that we can share some thoughts on things that have happened in Jewish history around this time, things that are coming up in the Jewish calendar, and some interesting takes on some of those things as well. Well, by some kind of divine providence, as an intro to this hour with you, the song choice that was made right at the beginning here was clearly a song that combines Hebrew and Spanish. Now, the combination of Hebrew and Spanish in times gone by was known as Ladino. And it's actually, interestingly enough, something significant about today. Today's date is the 19th of Av. Yeah, we're past the midway point, as we did last Shabbos, of the month of Menachem Av. And we're now into the latter part of the month, a more upbeat part, of course, of the month than the earlier part of the month, the first half embedded in the 9 days, the 10 days, including Tisha B'Av and so on. But then, as we spoke about last week, we turn the corner. We go to Chamish Asar B'Av, to the 15th of Av, and then the days that follow are kind of in an upward trend. But today, the 19th of Av, marks the Yahrzeit of a rabbi by the name of Rabbi Yaakov Kuli, who passed away on this day in 1732. Who was Rabbi Yaakov Kuli? And that's usually spelled C-U-L-I, Rabbi Yaakov Kuli, C-U-L-I. He was born in Jerusalem around about 1689, not 100% sure exactly, but about 1689. And he moved to Constantinople in Turkey, otherwise known as Istanbul, where he found adequate facilities and financial backing to publish the scholarly output that he'd learned from his grandfather, Rabbi Moshe Ibn Habib, including classics such as Get Pashut and Ezrat Nashim. This brilliant young scholar quickly came to the attention of the chief rabbi of Constantinople, whose name was Rabbi Rosanes. He was the leader of Sephardic Jewry at the time. And he was, this Rabbi Yaakov Kuli, was then appointed to the Beth Din of Constantinople. And upon the passing of the chief rabbi, Rabbi Yaakov edited and published his late teacher's writings and his own additional glosses, Mishneh LeMelech on Maimonides' Mishneh Torah and Prishat Drachim. Now, towards the end of his own short life, Rabbi Kuli began work on something called Me'am Lo'ez, a compendium of rabbinic lore and commentary on all the books of the Torah. He wrote in Ladino. He wrote in Ladino, this combination of Spanish-Hebrew language, which was then the common language of the Sephardi diaspora. They spoke Ladino. There was always the thing of Jews speaking in a language of their own, not only wanting to have a language that you could be private about and have hearsayers, the onlookers and people around you not knowing what you were talking about. There was always a reluctance to speak in Hebrew. Hebrew was regarded as the language of Torah and the language of prayer. It was God's language. That was the language that we used only in shul, in Beis Midrash, and so on. And even the Gemara, even the Talmud, was written in something called Aramaic, Aramaic being the language that was spoken at the time. While using Hebrew letters, Aramaic was a combination of, it's almost like a little bit of Arabic as well as Hebrew overlaid, but it wasn't Hebrew, dafka not Hebrew. And then later on the Ashkenazi side, they started speaking Yiddish, the Yiddish being the combination of German or the Ashkenazi language. Of course, Ashkenaz in Jewish is actually Germany, the center of Ashkenazi Jewry being in that part of Europe, and the language became Yiddish. Well, the Sephardim had the same notion, the same idea, and their language was Ladino. Now, this Rabbi Kuli wrote in Ladino, and unfortunately, he never got to complete his project. He passed away on the 19th of Av in 1732, which is today being his yahrzeit, and he had only completed at the time of his death the book of Breshit and most of Shmot, Genesis and Exodus, but subsequent scholars used his extensive notes. He had done a lot of research, and they actually finished the work. Now, it's popular to this day. Me'am Lo'ez has been translated into many languages. It's available in Hebrew and English and even in Arabic. And it is a well-known classical work on Torah, a fantastic combination of midrash and insights and traditions and beautiful stories and wonderful things that you find in the Me'am Lo'ez. It became a real classical work written by Rabbi Yaakov Kuli, written in that combination of Spanish and Hebrew, Ladino, and something significant for today. Now, while we're talking about published works, I don't know if you know, but the Zohar, the first publishing of the Zohar, took place on the 20th of Av, that's tomorrow, in 1558. It was the first printing of the Zohar, which was known as the fundamental work of Kabbalah, of Jewish esoteric and mystical teachings, authored by the great Talmudic sage, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And we know all about him, and we learn all about him, of course, and the wonderful traditions that surround Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai when it comes to Lag BaOmer, which is, of course, a story for another day. And then tomorrow is also the yahrzeit of Rabbi Levi Yitzchok Schneerson. Rabbi Levi Yitzchok Schneerson passed away in 1944. He was, of course, the father of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, of our Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson. His father was Rabbi Levi Yitzchok Schneerson. He passed away in a place called Alma-Ata in Kazakhstan. And Rabbi Levi Yitzchok was the chief rabbi before that of Yekaterinoslav, which is now known as Dnepro. And he was arrested and exiled to Kazakhstan. Yeah, he didn't go to live in Kazakhstan out of choice. He wasn't in Alma-Ata because it was his chosen place on the map to live and to teach and do all these wonderful things. He was the chief rabbi of one of the greatest cities in the Ukraine, then, of course, part of Russia. He was arrested. He was sent to Kazakhstan by the Stalinist regime. And, of course, this was all for the heinous crime, in inverted commas, of working to preserve Jewish life in the Soviet Union. Exiled there. There he died in 1944, father of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And we'll speak a little bit more about him in the coming segment of the show.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and welcome back. Yes, this is Rabbi Michael Katz. It's Judaism 101.9, and we are talking about Rabbi Levi Yitzchok Schneerson, who was the father of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, passed away on the 20th of Av, that's tonight and tomorrow is the yahrzeit, in 1944. Now, there are heroes and there are heroes. Rabbi Levi Yitzchok Schneerson was possibly one of the greatest, let's call it unsung heroes, of modern Judaism, of Jewish life. The most incredible man with the most incredible ability and insight and teachings. And his son, the Rebbe, often would touch on things that his father had taught and things that his father had learnt and studied and expounded upon and written. The most incredible, incredible insights, particularly into mystical, the mystical parts of Judaism. Something really incredible. But his life story and what he was all about was in itself a tremendous inspiration. And if you want to know where a great person like the Lubavitcher Rebbe got some of his own personal great grounding inspiration and ability from, we have to say in no small way it came obviously from his parents. And his father, whose Yahrzeit is tonight and tomorrow, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Schneerson, was one of those people who, until kind of recently, and when I say recently, the Rebbe always spoke about him, but until it was kind of documented and people looked into it a lot more, he was one of those more unknown kind of entities, a man who had himself had a great, incredible tenure as a chief rabbi, as a rabbi of Yekaterinoslav, but then unfortunately dying in exile. And it's one of the crimes that has been perpetrated against Am Yisrael, against the Jewish people, and against our great Torah scholars, that very often they were snuffed out and they were murdered, they were massacred, they were cut off. And perhaps this was the sinister program, of course, of the Nazis, Yamach Shmom, of the communists, of those that came before them and those after them, to make sure that the bright lights that they were and the tremendous teaching that they had to offer was sidelined, was snuffed out in some way. However, thank God, the Rebbe himself kept his father, Rebbe Levi Yitzchak Schneerson, and his teachings alive. And of course, there are many works of his that have been published since his passing in 1944. But I thought it would be interesting if we just take a look for the next short while at a little bit of the background, the life story of Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Schneerson. So first of all, he was born in 1878. His birthday, the 18th of Nisan, in the town of Podrovna near Gomel. His parents were Rabbi Baruch and Rebbetzin Zelda Rochel Schneerson. He was the oldest of four children. He had two brothers, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shalom Shlema, and one sister, Rebbetzin Rada Sima. His father was a great-grandson of the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, who was known as the Tzemach Tzedek. So there was a strong family connection to the Rebbe's family. Early years, as a small child, Rebbe Levi Yitzchak showed signs of being a prodigy. The previous Rebbe would later write, already at a young age, his extraordinary talents were discovered. He mastered Kabbalah, Talmud, Hasidic philosophy, and he was ordained by the leading Torah authorities of his time, Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik of Brisk, Rabbi Eliyahu Chaim Meisel of Lodz. In 1900, at age 22, he married Rebbetzin Chana Yanovsky. She was the daughter of Rabbi Meir Shlomo Yanovsky, the Rabbi of Nikolaev, chassid of the Rabbi Meirash, and the young Rebbetzin was known as a scholar in her own right. The fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Shalom Dovber Schneerson, had suggested the shidduch. He was the shadchan, and the wedding took place on the 11th of Sivan in Nikolaev, where the couple would remain for almost a decade. Rabbi Yitzchak and Rebbetzin Chana gave birth to three sons, Menachem Mendel, who became Lubavitcher Rebbe. Then they had two other sons, Dov Ber and Yisrael Ariel Leib. the oldest son, Rabbi Menachem Mendel, was born on the 11th of Nisan in 1902, and he would grow up, of course, as we said, to become the Lubavitcher Rebbe. At age 31, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak was called to serve as the rabbi of the Ukrainian city of Yekaterinoslav, today known as Dnepropetrovsk. Difficult word to pronounce. Most people just call it Dnepo. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe of the time, the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, was instrumental in securing the position, sending letters to community leaders, and Rabbi Levi Yitzchak met with Menachem Usishkin, a community activist who served as the secretary of the First Zionist Congress. And following his appointment as rabbi, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak eventually assumed the position of chief rabbi, and he served the community until 1939. Now, besides a small Hasidic constituency, the community there included many non-religious professionals who also held this rabbi, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, in great esteem. His wife was fluent in several languages, and she, of course, contributed immensely to her husband's success and influence as a communal leader. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak resolutely engaged in religious activism, never giving in to the growing pressure from the Soviets. He oversaw the building of a new mikveh. He officiated at weddings and circumcisions, although these things were banned. And one area of particular note was his involvement in the production of Pesach Dikke Matzahs, because all the factories were owned by the government, and it was they set the standard of what the kashrut should be for all of these things, which of course wasn't up to the standards of a rabbi like Reb Levi Yitzchok. When even the Soviets knew that the Jews, that for the Jews to purchase their matzahs, they would require rabbinic authority, and when they turned to Reb Levi Yitzchok, who was renowned as the chief rabbi of a prominent city, he demanded that he be allowed to install his own rabbinic supervisors. Otherwise, he couldn't offer certification. When they refused, Reb Levi Yitzchok stuck to his guns. He traveled to Moscow. He met with Mikhail Kalinin to explain his position. Reb Levi Yitzchak's efforts bore fruit. The Soviets relented, and the Pesach matzahs would then be produced under proper rabbinic standards. Now, in 1939, at 3 o'clock in the morning of March the 28th, four agents of the NKVD arrived at the Schneerson home, and placing guards at the doors, they began to search the house. They rifled through the thousands of pages of Reb Levi Yitzchok's written works on Kabbalah, Halacha, rabbinic correspondence. They confiscated his certificates and a petition from the community of Jaffa that he emigrate and serve as the chief rabbi, along with visas for the entire family. And finally, at 6 o'clock in the morning, Reb Levi Yitzchok was arrested for his activities on behalf of Judaism in the Soviet Union. And after more than a year of torture and interrogation, Reb Levi Yitzchok was tried in Moscow, and he was sentenced to 5 years of exile in Central Asia. Reb Tzinchana followed to be with him in this remote place. He and the Rebbetzin's first home was in a place called Chili, which was a single room in the dwelling of a crude couple who had a young child. The room was had no door. It was damp. It was muddy. It was filled with swarms of mosquitoes. And they lived in great poverty and discomfort and had absolutely no privacy. They never discussed it, but they were starving. And once they did not taste a piece of bread, it was said, for an entire month. And with World War II by then ravaging Europe, many refugees ended up in the region of Kazakhstan, where Reb Levi Yitzchok was exiled, and he soon became quite well known amongst the Jewish refugees. Groups of men and women would gather there, and it was especially there was a lot of women whose husbands were taken away to the war, and they came to the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin for their counsel and advice, guidance, and some spiritual upliftment. And with the meager resources at their disposal, the rabbi and the Rebbetzin reached out to them, helped in every possible way, both materially and spiritually, sharing their meager rations with others, sharing their meager space with others, and making sure that Jews had a place in this terrible exile. In 1944, as Reb Levi Yitzchok's sentence was nearing its end, his physical health condition began to deteriorate. And he was, although he was unaware of it, there was a great, terrible illness that was racking his body, and he was severely weakened. And meanwhile, friends in nearby Alma-Ata resolved to secure the rabbi's release, and they contributed thousands of rubles. They gave of whatever they had in order to acquire proper permits for relocation. And after 6 weeks, they were finally able to obtain the release documents, and immediately after Pesach, Reb Levi Yitzchok and Reb Tzinchana went and arrived in Alma-Ata. It was a larger city. Living conditions were somewhat improved, and they could work more vigorously to help others, focus always on helping other people. But throughout that summer, the rabbi's illness grew worse. A young friend made a trip from Leningrad to Alma-Ata together with a well-known doctor. And the doctor didn't have a good prognosis for the rabbi. He had no cure for the ailment. Reb Levi Yitzchok and Reb Tzinchana endured those heartbreaking days with exceptional strength and fortitude. And despite their dire conditions, they continued to welcome others. They made sure that there wasn't a person who wasn't provided with what they needed in whatever possible way they could. And it was on the 20th of Av tonight and tomorrow that Reb Levi Yitzchak's condition turned critical. No longer able to speak, he murmured words of Torah and Tehillim, and that evening the Rebbetzin took a short rest, and when she came back, she found the house full of people because her husband, Reb Levi Yitzchak, had passed. Now, during his years as the rabbi, as well as of Yekaterinoslav, as well as while he was in exile, he wrote thousands of manuscripts of Torah analysis, novella, encompassing and intertwining in his unique style, Talmud, Halacha, Kabbalah, Hasidism. Unfortunately, most of these manuscripts were mislaid or destroyed by the communists and then later by the Nazis. But when she escaped Russia in 1947, the Rebbetzin Chana, it's the Rebbe's mother, managed to smuggle out the manuscripts that Reb Levi Yitzchak had hidden during his years of exile. And at the behest of the Rebbe, these were published in a five-volume set under the title Likutei Levi Yitzchak. In his father's memory, the Rebbe would also explain a passage of these Kabbalistic teachings at many of his Shabbat Farbrengens. And to this day, Likutei Levi Yitzchak remains one of the most unique works on Kabbalistic thought from the last century. So, a real unsung hero, a man who endured so much, so many hardships, so many difficulties, passes away at a relatively young age where he had so much more to give, and yet, right until the last moment, dedicated his life to helping others, to making sure that others were taken care of, not worrying about the fact that he himself and his Rebbetzin were starving, that they didn't have space to live, that they had no privacy, that they had people on top of them all the time. They were treated in unspeakable ways by their persecutors and by the communists and all of their ilk. And yet, never a nasty word, always positive, with that positive and incredible energy. There is a story that is told by the Rebbetzin of how her husband, Reb Levi Yitzchak, would dance on Simchas Torah with a special nigun, a special song that lived on and is still used, of course, at the Hakafot, at the Hakafas, at the Simchas Torah celebrations of the Lubavitcher Rebbe in New York on Shmini Atzeret and Simchat Torah, his father's special nigun, a song to which, in the days in Yekaterinoslav, he would dance with thousands of people in his shul as the chief rabbi of the city. Thousands of people celebrating Simchat Torah, Shmini Atzeret Hakafot, together with him. But when it came to his exile, he himself alone would get up and dance to the same tune, with the same nigun. And she remarked about he had the same regal appearance, the same smile on his face, the same joy and fervor as he had with the thousands. He did exactly the same when it was just him and God Almighty. An incredible lesson and something really, really beautiful for us to think about in terms of Reb Levi Yitzchak Schneerson, Yortzeit tonight, Chof Menachem Av, and what a legacy and what an incredible individual and what incredible teachings he's left for each and every one of us. Be back with you right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, Rabbi Michael Katz here, back with you on Judaism 101.9. Great to be with you. And yes, we're coming to the end part of our time together for this day. But let's reflect back. We're thinking about Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Schneerson, whose Yortzeit is tonight. The terrible things that he had to endure, but the incredible, incredible legacy that he left, not only in terms of his son, who became the Lubavitcher Rebbe and revolutionized just about everything in the way of Judaism and what it means to Jews today, and the growth and exponential growth of Chabad, of Lubavitch, around the entire world, and everything that it means to Jews everywhere, safe havens, places of warmth and of kindness, and then some, of course, the legendary work of Chabad around the world, of course, coming from the Rebbe, but He was brought into this world and he was raised by a great man by the name of Rabbi Levi Yitzchok Schneerson. So it wasn't just that, although that alone would have been more than enough. There was a tremendous lesson that he gives each and every one of us. The lesson of the ability to confront your difficulties with that type of attitude of not only getting on with it, but never making it about themselves, making sure that others were cared for. Looking at the fact that he was exiled to the most long-forgotten, God-forsaken place on earth, and yet still there, being able to provide for those who need it in that type of terrible environment, truly becoming a beacon of hope and of light for them all in every possible way. And when we think about the day of a yahrzeit in general, as we have explained before, is not a day only on which we remember and on which we light a candle and on which we say Kaddish for someone who's departed, but the day is a day of the elevation of their soul to the world on high, to the next world, to Olam Haba. And in that place and in that space, the day on which they arrived there, the day on which they departed this world and were elevated to that one, is a special day of great elevation, day of completion of life's work, but then a day of expansion in a spiritual sense of their neshamas as they continue to live on, not only through their works and through their teachings, but through everything that they left to those who remain behind as their great and tremendous legacy. So there's a tremendous power of that individual in the day on which they leave this world, in the day on which they arrive in the next. This is the power of something that we call a yahrzeit. Now, to most, the idea of a yahrzeit is a day of trepidation, of sadness, of mourning. And yet, from a spiritual point of view, it's really a day of great elevation and of power, of energy. The energy of that soul, the energy of that person, which was prevalent in the world in a physical sense up until their departure, until this date when they left the world. Now it is here in a strong, strong form on that day for us to be able to take a part of their legacy, a part of their teachings, a part of their energy of what they stood for and what they were all about, to take it and integrate it into our own lives. It is there. It's available. It's placed out there and in there by those neshamas, by those souls. And so therefore, if we can possibly read up, look at, study, learn, and connect in some way with Reb Levi Yitzchok Schneerson tonight and tomorrow, and think about how great he was and he can continue to be, we are empowered. We have that legacy. We have that energy that will be ingested, imbibed, readily available for each and every one of us to take on board, to live by, to expand, to not only identify with, but to actually integrate into our lives in every possible fashion. It's a day of great strength, a great day of great power, a day on which each and every one of us can just get that little bit closer to where we are with the help and in the merit of Reb Levi Yitzchok Schneerson. I'm going to wish you a great rest of the week, a great Shabbat up ahead. We hope that you've learned something today. We hope you continue to study and to learn, and look forward to being back with you same time, same place next week on another episode of Judaism 101.9.